हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So now the point is that someone may ask, how can one understand the truth of this Supreme who has many mutually contradictory natures? So Sutra 4 then, he is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He cannot be known by ordinary knowledge, for he is known only by devotional service. So the purport to Mantra 4. Through mental speculation, even the greatest philosopher cannot know the Supreme Lord, who is the absolute personality of Godhead. He can be known only by his devotees through his mercy. In the Brahma Samhita 534, it is stated that even if a non-devotee philosopher travels through space at the speed of the wind or the mind for hundreds of millions of years, he will still find that the absolute truth is far, far away from him. Although the individual parts and parcels of the Lord's potencies have all the symptoms of the Lord himself, they have limited spheres of activity and are therefore all limited. And the parts and parcels are never equal to the whole. Therefore, they cannot appreciate the Lord's full potency. Under the influence of the material nature, foolish and ignorant living beings, who are but parts and parcels of the Lord, try to conjecture about the Lord's transcendental position. Shirsha Upanishad warns of the futility of trying to establish the identity of the Lord through mental speculation. One should try to learn of the transcendence from the Lord himself, supreme source of the Vedas, for the Lord alone has full knowledge of the transcendence. So these speculators, they can go on. There's this idea that by my intelligence I will grasp everything, I'll control. So it's just another form of control, right? Through intelligence, through, you know, strength, through influence, politics, through money, through arts, through emotion, whatever it is, something one feels one will control. But here, then we see is that these persons, even though they're very smart, and if they can travel at the speed of mind for millions of years, they can't get close to the Lord. So, because the point is the Lord is everywhere, so you're already close. So if they are having to go find the Lord, means they don't actually know who they're looking for. You know what I'm saying? So they're always going to travel, they're never going to find. They're never going to see, because unless the Lord reveals himself. Now the living entity is small, so he is only a part and parcel, so he only has part of the qualities, like that. They're limited. So they cannot appreciate the complete whole. Does that make sense? So being limited in qualities, one can't appreciate something that's complete in qualities. So it's only by the Lord's revelation, by him revealing to you, by his mercy, then one can appreciate. Otherwise, it's something different than us. You know what I'm saying? Krishna is different than us. Therefore, to understand him, it's only by his mercy that we can. Right? Otherwise, how one will? It's outside of one's ability, one's perspective. Does that make sense? Yeah. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He cannot be known by the material mind or described by material words. He is known only by devotional service. The Shruti Shastra declares, The material mind cannot understand the Supreme. Material words cannot describe Him. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.12.21, the Supreme Lord Himself declares, quote, "I am understood only by devotional service." In the Shruti Shastra it is said, "The Supreme is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss." In the Brahma Samhita 5.1 it is said, "Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for He is the prime cause of all causes." So the origin can only be understood by the grace of the origin. You can't say that I, coming from there, therefore I have power over. So this is the point Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes, is that the one of the most amazing things is that the infinitesimally small thinks they're unlimitedly great, like that. They can't understand that they're small and that's just the way it is. Krishna's great, we're small. In the Vishnu Purana is the following explanation of the word Satchidananda. "O Lord, You are the support of everything. The three attributes, Haladini, Sandini, and Samvit, exist in You as one spiritual energy. But the material modes which cause happiness, misery, and mixture of the two do not exist in You, for You have no material qualities." Okay. So this Samvit, Sandini, Haladini, then they exist in the Lord. The modes of nature, then they are part of the material energy. So He does not deal with them. Right? He then empowers Maya, who deals with them. But He Himself doesn't deal with them. So then there will be nothing there for the material mind and intelligence to understand. Because the material mind and intelligence can only speculate on things within the modes, because that's what it's made out of. Right? The mind's made out of goodness, the intelligent passion, so they can think about those things. But they won't be able to think of transcendence, because that's another nature. So only by the Lord's mercy, then one can understand this, you know. So one may hear all that and say, no, but by intelligence, but by logic, no. It's like, they'll be saying that, oh, you're just saying this so that I can't, you're just saying because you can't explain it. But the point is yes, it can't be explained, it can't be understood except by the Lord's mercy. One has to accept that there's something beyond us, because this whole world's going on, and just because you understand it doesn't change the course of it. It still functions the way it does, whether you understand it or not. Right? So it's not like the Buddhist concept that if I don't hear it, it doesn't make a sound. Right? So this is that you can understand it or not understand it, the material nature goes on exactly the way it is. Right? So only one benefited is us, not the nature is benefited. So in the same way, it's something beyond. So then, if this is so amazing that one is applying one's intelligence and trying to understand so many things, then what about the person who's created it? Right? And especially if we take into perspective view the element that Krishna says this is just a spark of His splendor, and we're thinking it's so amazing and so difficult to understand. Right? If the nature can be contradictory and we can accept that, why can't we accept a God like that, who's the source of the material energy? Right? If we see human nature as contradictory, so many things in the material energy is contradictory, why wouldn't then God have those same qualities? He's the source of it. Does that make sense? The man creates a car, right? There's a place to sit. Why? Because man sits down. Right? Isn't it? He does work with his hands and legs and his head. So therefore the car is designed so that the hands and legs and head can make the car work. Does that make sense? So it's not different from the Creator. Does that make sense? A nest is created by a bird. It works for a bird. It doesn't work for us, because the bird's created it. So therefore, this whole material energy, everything has been created by the Lord. Why there will not be elements that are symptomatic of the qualities of the Lord? Right. A commentary on this verse follows. The verse means, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, in you, who are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, and the shelter of all, exists one inconceivable potency, which is manifested in three as Ladini, Sandini, and Sambit. That is the meaning. Okay, so that's the commentary. Okay, the verse then means this. Then he's pointing out. That is the meaning. The question may be asked, O Lord, what are you like? The verse explains, O Lord, you are beyond the material modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. This means that the material modes which cause happiness, misery, and the mixtures of the two do not exist in the Lord. It is the potency of spiritual bliss that exists in the Lord. Thus, it is said. Right, so here we see he's bringing it back to this one potency, and this one potency then has three, is manifested in three. The Ladini, Sambit, and Sandini. Right? So, therefore, he is the one Lord, his energy is the one energy, but then it is manifest in these three, therefore he then reciprocates in these three. Right? So then from these three you get Madan Mohan, Govind, and Gopinath. Right? So then that means all the pastimes are unfolded through these three moods. Right? So that means then the energy is also then dealing with him in these three. So that's the common point. Does that make sense? Right? Krishna is one. He expands his energy as two, but their interaction is based on this three. Yeah. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? The connection between Krishna is one, right? Then when he expands, then there's two. There's him and his potencies. A potency is manifest as three. So those three, then you're dealing with sambandhavideya prayojana, right? Madan Mohan, or attraction, or the one's identity is sambandha. Govindaji is the activities or the pastimes. You know, that's Govinda, yeah. And that's your abhideya. And then prayojana is Gopinath, you know, or that love or that which is obtained by those interactions, right? So because he's approached then with these three, therefore he manifests these three. So the interaction then is between Krishna and his internal potency based on these three, the manifestation of these three. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. In the Markandeya Purana, Shakti Mahatmya, first chapter, Chandi declares, no one should be surprised that the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoys pastimes of yoga nidra, mystic sleep. After all, the Lord's illusory potency, Maya, bewilders the entire material world. Right? So Chandi is a form of Durga, right? Of Maya. So she's saying this. This is coming, you know, she's making this point. That no one should be surprised that he has, you know, his yoga nidra. Because he is his illusory potency, Maya, in other words, her, bewilders the whole material world. Right? So she is able to do that, so therefore there must be an origin in the Supreme Lord. Right? Quote, entering even the sage's heart, goddess Mahamaya bewilders the conditioned souls. By her, this entire material universe of moving and unmoving beings is created. When she is satisfied, she gives the blessings of liberation to the conditioned soul. She gives the blessing of liberation. She doesn't give liberation. That's Krishna, that's Mukunda. But she gives the blessing. In other words, when she feels that you're ready for it, then she'll recommend. Like that. Because she's dealing on a day-to-day basis. She knows where you're at. So when she feels you're actually on that platform, then she'll recommend. She is the eternal transcendental knowledge that brings liberation. She is also the potency that binds the conditioned souls to the world of birth and death. She is the goddess of all goddesses. Right, so now you can understand here where they get these things. The Shakti is supreme, but they're taking it here. They don't catch the Yogamaya, Mahamaya element or the internal potency. It means the one potency. In other words, she is the supreme. like that. But there's so many forms. So farther down the line is Durga. That manifestation. So she's supreme above that. But they'll take it that this means Durga, because Chandi's speaking this. Like that. So they're taking it, she's talking about herself in the form of Chandi. No, she's talking about herself in it as the Surup Shakti. Does that make sense? In Bhagavad Gita 9.8.9, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, "The whole cosmic order is under me. By my will it is manifested again and again, and by my will it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached, seated as though neutral." Right? Because he is just making arrangements. In other words, as the soul is surrendering, he's making, creating that facility, he's reciprocating. So it's not that he's attached to this. It's the soul that's attached to this. So why would he be bound? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. In the highest Shirsha Pancharatra, it is said, quote, "The Supreme Lord's transcendental bliss is said to be of two kinds. One, that of his form, and two, that of his formless aspect. The form of the Lord is the shelter of his formless aspect. Therefore, it is the bliss of the Lord's aspect of form that is really eternal and imperishable. The Lord's form and his formless aspect are both full of knowledge and beyond the touch of the material modes. These qualities are also present in the original form of the individual spirit souls. In truth, there is no real difference between the Lord's form and his formless aspect. The difference is only an imagination of the Vedas. The two are like a jewel in its splendor." Means a jewel is very nice because it's so bright and brilliant and everything. Like that. So that's the formless. You know what I'm saying? So there's no difference. The point is the form is the shelter of the formless. Right? So without the form, there is no formless. Right? So that's what's important. Then you see the two. Then you see it in perspective. Then you can appreciate them both together. Like that. Does that make sense? So with that, these things, with that understanding, then one can understand Krishna pervading this universe, that's through the formless. Right? He as a person with the form then comes as Karana Dakshai, Garbha Dakshai, and Kira Dakshai Vishnu. And in this way expands us so much, but it's through the formless that he creates all the variety that's here in this world. Right? So then we can understand is that that is so, we are so bewildered by that, right? The reflection in the darkness, right? That effulgence, that element. Then we are, so his effulgence and everything is being reflected into this water of the Jiva's material desire. So we're seeing this brilliantness that's here and thinking it's so wonderful, but that's just Krishna's, an aspect of Krishna's effulgence. It's not even the full effulgence, it's just an aspect of it. Right? So that means how much more wonderful is he as a person. Right? So that's the natural step. So that way then one counteracts the material attraction, the material existence. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. So these things where there's a difference, it's only an imagination of the Vedas. So it's being presented for those who want to see it separate. Those who want to see the formless as separate from the Lord, then it's explained in such a way that one can make that, have that misunderstanding. In the Kapila Pancharatra, it is said, quote, "The Supreme has two aspects, his transcendental form and his formless aspects. Thus it should be known that all-powerful Lord Narayana has a form and is formless also." Right, because we're dealing here with contradictions. So this is the main contradiction. If this can be understood, all other aspects can be understood. Right? Because if you can understand, you can be have form and be formless at the same time. You can understand he's energetic and energy at the same time. Right? Because this is from here you get all your tattva, and then from the other you get all your rasa. Right?
What's the other?
The other. they're the ones that aren't lost. That makes sense. Doesn't it? Okay. Means Krishna and his how he is not different from his energy. So you have Krishna and expands as his internal potency, so they're non-different. So in the same way, so but from that interaction all rasa is coming. But him and his splendor, you know, or the formless aspect, that then is he's non-different. Because the energy itself also is the energy, you know, you also have that aspect of that of the formless also. It's the means you have the effulgence of something that is an energy. Right? So then you have the splendor of his potency. You know, of his qualities and all that, but at the same time his energy does have a form. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to accommodate both of these. You know, Krishna's everything. At the same time he's a person. So Shakti is the complement to that everything. At the same time, she's a person. You know what I'm saying? So in this way, they both pervade the whole universe in both form and formless. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the highest Shirsha of Pachratra, it is said, quote, the Vedas say that the Supreme has no qualities, but they also say that he certainly does have qualities. By carefully considering all the statements of the Vedas, we have come to the conclusion that more weight should be given to the statements affirming the Lord's possession of transcendental qualities. In his book, Amnaya Sutra, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, quote, although realization of the impersonal aspect of the Supreme is not the final goal, it is sometimes a useful intermediary stage, that the realization of the impersonal aspect of the Supreme is sometimes useful at a certain stage of spiritual development, as seen in these words of the Isha Upanishad, Mantra 7. Quote, one who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Right? So these elements where we're seeing in these, in other words, you're seeing something in connection with Krishna in that interaction. Then that's the personal aspect. But something where you're seeing the living entities as sparks, you know, as spiritual sparks, or as parts and parcels of the Lord, or as, you know, Lord's energy, the material energy is just his energy. These things, these are then you're dealing with the Brahman aspect. Right? So it has its benefit in that it is a natural intermediary stage between material attachment and spiritual attachment. Because in that intermediary stage, what it does is it allows one to give up material attachment, but be situated on the spiritual platform, from which one can then, in that purified state, by the Lord's mercy and the association of devotees, develop an appreciation and attraction and attachment to Krishna's personal feature. Right, so the attachment is there to the personal qualities. Otherwise, we're attached to the what we'd call personal qualities here, but actually what we're attached to is dead matter. So technically, we're on the Brahman platform anyway. Just somehow or another, we mistakenly think that it's personal and it's all happening. Does that make sense? It's just the external manifestation of the quality of Brahman. Right? There's strength, there's something that manifests that strength. So we see that, and we think there, so we interact with that. So the relationship is there, but a relationship is there with dead matter. Right? So it's does that make sense? That's why also you could say is that one has to understand, is if you understand this principle, then it also, your dealings with the personal, how do you say it? You're able to accommodate the personal. Because the qualities and all that come, your generic qualities, then there's the specific. Like you can say, there's a category, trees are like this, or humans are like this, or men like this, women like this, or adults like this, kids like this. Right? So some will appreciate that, because from that, then they they are able to then get a better understanding of the individual, the personal aspect, right? It's as an approach, as an intermediary. It's not the support, not the, because you know the generic therefore. No, the main is, it's a way to approach. Does that make sense? But some get annoyed and disturbed and distressed because they'll say it's impersonal, you're categorizing. So that's not allowed because they only want the personal. But then they're not actually accepting the person because the person also has generic qualities. And they are a person within those generic qualities. You know what I'm saying? So you're using the reverse method here because actually that's how the jiva gets into it. But from the Supreme Lord, he has his unlimited qualities. A portion of that then is brought into the material creation that creates the original or the basic qualities of everything in the universe. Right? The primeval or primordial, you know, human or tree or rock or mountain.
Archetypal.
Yes. So that will be the primary creation. Then from that comes the secondary creation. Then within that, depending on what we're attracted to, then we develop those things, right? That's the law of attraction, right? Is it according to what you're attached to, that's what you attract. So you get that kind of, you know, ear, eye, nose, throat, and all those things like that. Does that make sense? So this intermediate stage has a use, but it's only an intermediate stage. It doesn't have any other use, right? Like before, discussing that that means that when one who is sincere in a purified state, then devotional service can be revealed. One can be situated in that platform. Rasa can be tasted. So purification, therefore, looks like it's a prominent element, but its only use is that it can allow one to understand or appreciate devotional service. So it itself is not on its own a quality that stands alone. Devotional service stands alone. Any other qualities there are not. It doesn't matter. It stands alone. But these other qualities, the quality of purity, doesn't stand on its own. It only stands in connection with devotional service. Does that make sense? Same way as the Brahman, all these different effulgent of Krishna, it only has a standing in connection with Krishna. It doesn't stand on its own. But Krishna as a person can manifest those qualities or not. As Atmarama, he cannot manifest them, but he still exists. Then he can manifest them. Does that make sense? Yeah, so devotional service stands out, these others don't. That's why all the aspects of devotional service have to be seen in connection with devotional service. Otherwise, many times we'll think that just to be good, be nice, and that's the essential point. Does that make sense? So it's like, let's say, okay. But the intermediate stage of impersonalism is not always recommended as it is shown in the Sri Upanishad Mantra 12. Quote, those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. Right, so this intermediate stage is useful in connection with devotional service, but if it's not in connection with devotional service, it's not recommended. Right, as it said here, these both. One could take it that the intermediate stage here is that the worshippers of the absolute, impersonal absolute truth, one could take that as that's the point. And then there's the demigod aspect is another. So we're just taking this. But we must remember the demigods are the various manifestations of the Krishna's potencies. So it's also another form of the formless. Krishna's quality has been given form by the material energy. Does that make sense? So both of these, so the worshippers of the demigods and the worshippers of that, because they're trying to worship the formless separate from the form. Does that make sense? So for the devotees, they worship the formless in connection with, right? The living entities are spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Lord. So they're seeing the energy, but in connection with the Lord. So therefore, then, this use of the impersonal intermediary works. But the other one doesn't work. Someone, there was a hand somewhere. Yes. Oh, another one. Go ahead.
And Bhaktivinoda says it can be used for devotional service. Practically, how would we as devotees use that, like seeing everyone as, you know, spark of Krishna? Like, how would we know whether we're using it just as an impersonal, useless kind of sense, or actually...
Well, what's your purpose in doing that?
Yeah, that's the question. Like, how would we use it in devotional service?
Means you're seeing as this... that, so therefore there's nothing for you to gain from them or to lose by them. I'm saying, so one can't be upset with them or disturbed by them, or, you know, they're just the Lord's parts and parcels, right? Who they themselves as an individual may be in Krishna consciousness or in illusion. And so therefore they see the creation in connection to Krishna, therefore they're engaged in devotional service, or they don't see it and they're engaged in illusory activities. But in any case, the soul is still the same soul. Right? It's still transcendental. But it's just whether it understands that or it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So those that do, then you see it in connection to the Lord. You don't see those souls who... in illusion think that they are transcendental. Well, it means know they're transcendental, but still the illusion that they're still separate from the Lord. You know, those ones are avoided. You know what I'm saying? The materialist is better than them. Because the materialist is at least accepting the personal aspect. So then you could convince them about God and service to God. While the impersonalist doesn't accept service, doesn't accept God. Doesn't accept the form. So therefore there's nothing to work with. Even though they're very intelligent, they're very renowned, so they have so many good qualities that put them in one sense in a higher position. You know, as far as getting out of the material world, they're in the higher position. But as far as getting into the spiritual world, unless they convert to devotional service, they're worse off than the materialist. But if they do convert, then they're very advanced. Because they're already automatically at the intermediate stage. Like that. So they don't go through the neophytes. They just immediately go there. Or if they're actually liberated, then they're automatically on the Uttama platform. Does that make sense? But if they're not, then they're the worst, because we're dealing with the reflection. Is that okay? No, it's the formless. We're using that. This is the impersonalism is mentioned here because we're saying the formless. Because formless and impersonal means it's not with form. So our definition of impersonal doesn't mean that there's nothing. It just means that it's formless. It's generic. You know, let's say good. What is that? Okay. But now, you know, if I bring, you know, how you say, some mahaprasad. Now, the good has a form, right? So that's the personal manifestation. But good itself is generic, so therefore it's formless. So technically we mean formless, not impersonal. Impersonal is just a wording that's used of those working within the transcendence to define, you know, their supreme goal, right? Because they see this world as personal, therefore it has to be impersonal. But they'll also, they work fine with form and formless. Does that make sense? So that's why it said is that non-different. That was the purpose of this sutra, was to establish that these contradictory qualities can exist in the Lord at the same time. Does that make sense? Here someone may protest, right? So now he's made the point. Now he's saying, now someone may say. In other words, he's brought it, has the thesis, he's gone through the whole thing, established the conclusion, but the conclusion itself basically is the thesis, right? but it's been moved to the next stage. So now having moved it to the next stage, being this, that may bring up a doubt. Right? So therefore now we go to the next manifestation of thesis. So in other words, each one of those you're dealing with the Panchanga Nyaya. Right? And then the one automatically goes to the next. Here someone may protest. If this is so and the Supreme Lord is attained by devotional service, then the Supreme Lord must be a resident of the material world, for devotional services are rendered in the material world. To refute this idea, the author now speaks the fifth sutra. Sutra 5. He is the eternal supreme truth, beginningless and endless, for he exists beyond the limits of space and time. Right? So now this is where we really start having difficulty, because we see everything as space and time. Conditioned living entity, you're dealing with space and time. That's why there's such a difficulty in working with the form and the formless at the same time, because form we put into time and space, but unfortunately sometimes we also put Krishna into time and space. You know, how is it in Vrindavan then, you know, he can walk from Nandagaon out to the Jamuna, you know, in one day, just going out in the morning and he's right there. You don't hear that, you know, Krishna went out with the cowherd boys and then, you know, they had to stop for lunch and then by the afternoon he made it finally to the Jamuna and then they drank some water, but it was getting late so they had to get back. Otherwise Mother Yashoda would be worried, so they started the long trek of many, many hours so that they were finally back basically by around 5 o'clock. Right? No, it just says, basically you hear he goes out and then there's a little bit of playing on the way and then they're there. Right? So that'll bewilder us because it sounds okay, it's right there. But then if you go to Vrindavan, then you see as you know, Nandagaon's over in one place and you know, you've been on a, you know, asphalt road basically going in a fairly straight line for about an hour and then maybe you get there. You know? Like that. While this is they're just walking. Right? Does that make sense? So this is the whole aspect. You're not dealing with time and space. You know, Krishna is showing the whole universe, the cosmic creation within him. There's no time and space. Does that make sense? Krishna and the gopis can dance for one night of Brahma. Right? So that's basically 4 million years. You know, but it happens in our simple, our little night. Right? So all these things then become a difficulty if one doesn't appreciate this. At the same time as then, this Brahman aspect is also a problem because we want to limit that by time and space. Because as soon as you do that, then you create the forms. So here Krishna is unaffected by time and space, but still has form. So therefore, the Brahman element, this formless element, means it is unaffected by time and space. And still, you can deal with it. Right? Does that make sense? Yes?
Is it also the other way, because we can't fully comprehend with our material intelligence, then we put the impersonal? Like when you're a kid, you try and imagine what's beyond the end of the universe, kind of thing. So it's something you can't understand, so...
Yeah, it's a big controversy. Some are saying it's Mickey Mouse, some say it's Winnie the Pooh. And also others then say, when you go through the looking glass, that's what it means. I'm not sure what school you were in, but... you're dealing with that, because all we're ever dealing with is that. When you're dealing with just the qualities and all that, if you connect it to a person, that's that. If you say, this is wrong, you can't do like this, they're dealing with the formless aspect. Right? But it's in connection to something with form. There's been a transgression of the law. Right? But the law itself is the formless. Right? Then it has its manifestations as the form. So that's where always the difficulty is that, you know, you have some body of law or a constitution, then there's always the element of, that's the formless. Then is how to deal with that in the form. You know, is freedom of speech meaning that anybody could say anything in any forum, and that's freedom of speech. Or does other people's rights of what they want to listen to have something to do with it? You know what I'm saying? So this is moving from the formless to the form. Right? But why it is difficult for them and why there is no standards, it will be inconsistent, is because the form that they want to manifest is the particular, you know, form of the secondary creation. But the formless that they're basing it on is from the primary creation. Right? But now what they miss is that primary creation is based on the form of the original Supreme Lord. So when you see that, then you can understand the formless and apply it into the form here. Does that make sense? So this form formless is always used. It's just a matter of recognizing it. The thing is as a philosophy, you know, as a philosophy of transcendence, then it's something scary you want to stay away from. But as far as just what you use, then it even said here is that there's the personal and impersonal element of the living entity also. You know, that is Satchitananda, that's formless. What's Sat look like? What's Chit look like? What's Ananda look like? So then there's a form of that. So what is his existence? What is his relationship with Krishna? Therefore he has particular activity. Therefore he has particular... How do you say? Experiences. Right? Does that make sense? So the form and the formless you can't separate. The problem is because of material life we have an attachment for a non-devotional understanding of formless. Right? Because it's clouded by our attachment to material form. Right? So in giving up the material form, there's always the possibility that we'll take, therefore, transcendence means formless, which is true, but then the point is that formless comes from a form. You know, it's eternal, it's knowledge, it's bliss. Those are qualities of Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Those all will be attributed to the formless. Right? Does that make sense? But the problem is those came from a person. So there's always this aspect of using the thing. You know, when you say, well, everybody knows that. What's that? You're using the formless. Because who is that? Who is that everybody? It's one friend. You know? But that won't carry, says, well, my friend said this. They agree with me on that. So what? It's two of you against me. What is the big deal? Everybody, you know, there's woo, you know. You know. Does that make sense? That it might not even, everybody might even be what you feel they should be thinking, or what you think, what you've interpreted that they think. And maybe nobody thinks like that. You're the only one. But hey, you know, as long as the other person buys it, it works. You know, if they don't buy it, they call your bluff. Well, who are these people? Then you got a problem. But as long as it means, in other words, formless is countered with formless, it works. But as soon as formless is countered with form, it breaks down. So that shows the form is stronger than the formless. But the problem is the material form is junior to the formless. And that formless is then junior to Krishna's form. Like that. So that's why the impersonal appears to be superior, because it is superior to material form. But it's junior or inferior to spiritual form. So that's why the contradiction is that it's both. You know? That's how the impersonals will be superior to the karmi, but junior to the devotee. Like that. Because the formless is in between the two. Right? So if you're dealing on the material, the formless is above. So it takes you it takes you into transcendence, because it's touching transcendence. It is transcendence. Does that make sense? But so it's a matter of you have Krishna, And then you have his qualities. The effulgence of those qualities is the Brahman. That's the formless. So based on those qualities, the material creation is, the primary creation is created. Right? And then they have their natural forms of that manifestation. So then they are made to accomplish. You know, in other words, the dog accomplishes dogness. You know what I'm saying? The sun accomplishes, you know, effulgence or, you know, heat, you know, or maintenance of life. So those qualities are already there first. But Krishna is the source of those. He is those. Anyway, unlimited qualities. He is the reservoir of all that. So the form and the formless are there. But there the form is first. Here the form is second. So here we use the formless as the intermediate to get from the form to the formless, means it breaks the material form, but establishes us on the transcendental platform, but as personal formless. You know what I'm saying? It means our understanding of the formless is in connection with the form. So it's our understanding of Brahman is personal still, but we know it's formless. It is Brahman, but it's in relation to the person. Does that make sense? So the intermediate stage means you brought yourself material to transcendental, but still you have to get to devotional. Right? So they're cultivated together. Right? You're performing the devotional activities and all that. Those are direct, so you're directly cultivating devotional service. At the same time, those aspects that are keeping one in the material world, in other words, those forms that keep one in the material world, you deal with them. You take them from there to the formless, right? Then the generic quality doesn't have as much of attractive, you know, good, nice, but it has to be, you know, because if I say, yes, it should be good, then everybody in their own mind makes a form of what that should be, right? The quality comes first, you know, it means you'll have the quality, that will come up into the action of the quality, then it'll come up into the form of the quality. You know what I'm saying? So you can even take that and divide it. Does that make sense? Like that. So the verb already is the action of the quality of what it can do. But then it needs a form or the noun to actually do it. Right? But before that had to be just the quality, that nod, the nod Brahman. You know, it's just the quality of it. Then it will come up into the other things. You have the quality of it, then the energy of it. Then you'll have the accomplishment of it, then the form that accomplishes it. Does that make sense? So you still have to do those three. Then you have the expression of it. And so it'll go through all these stages. So every sound or every word goes through these stages. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes?
Formless and impersonal, they are synonyms?
Say again?
Formlessness and impersonal.
You can say they're synonyms, but as synonyms go, they generally have a slightly different connotation. So therefore, the impersonal, we can use it both ways. But most people, impersonal means that impersonal is the supreme. There is no, so transcendence has no form. What we're saying is transcendence has a form and no form. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's these words, we get attached to them. And because of that, we have our own connotation. So all this, these exercises are to break that. Right? Because you're redefining the words, you're redefining the context. You know what I'm saying? One has an attachment to food, one just eats food and everything like this, you know, like that. But if you redefine it, is what is food for? What actually is food for? Right? It's for nourishing the body. Right? Then along with that, then when the sense and the sense object come in contact, then there is taste. Does that make sense? But the point is that it's something worth eating. Right? Otherwise, you can take a bicycle and somehow or another make it taste good. You know what I'm saying? So But it has to, it's something there. So when it's redefined there, then it automatically starts, you have to eat things that are worthwhile. Right? Does that make sense? So it starts to break down. It means, in other words, you're attached to a form, but as soon as you bring it to the formless, it starts to bring down the attachment. Right? Because that's what knowledge does. There's knowledge and there's not as much ignorance as bliss, right? So as soon as you introduce knowledge, then the bliss of the ignorance starts to go away. Does that make sense? Yes or no?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the thing, is you're identifying it in its actual, what it is, not how we perceive it, but what it actually is. So then you have to take what that actually is in connection to some authority. Right? The drunk person is drunk. He thinks it's good. People who aren't drunk don't think it's good. So if he wants to come to the point of not being an alcoholic, he has to accept that he is drunk and it's not good. You understand? But until that is accepted, those elements are accepted, he can't cure himself. Right? That's the first step when they're dealing with this AA, is that they have to acknowledge that they are an alcoholic and it's not good for them. Until they accept that, then nothing's going to get anywhere. No one's going to learn it. You know what I'm saying? So you brought the, you know, form into the formless. Does that make sense? Then from there, then you create a new form. Does that make sense? So they're doing this to be happy or whatever is the reason. Then they find them a better form that won't be so destructive. Right? Does that make sense? So when you replace the material form, you break that with the formless, and then you establish, you know, Krishna and his associates and the Dham and the eternal pastimes. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. So end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prenandi. All these other ones, I just want the page and stick it in the folder.
So many?
Just one. So I can stick it in where we are.